behind the screen. There's a world of pure imagination behind the screen.
Hey everybody, how's it going? This is Paul Goble. You are listening to the Paul Goble Show. With me, as always, is my co-host and best friend, Jim Bruce.
Hey, everybody.
Tom Griffin is on assignment this week.
That's right.
We sent him out on assignment to eat turkey.
And try to connect with his parents.
Right, try to visit his parents and, you know, maybe...
FYI, long shot.
Yeah, I don't know it's going to happen, but, you know, every year we try it. Our guest this week is a very funny gentleman, a legend of comedy. You may have seen him in such films as Groundhog Day or Willow or Eight-Legged Freaks or any number of movies or TV shows. It's Mr. Rick Overton is here today. Welcome, Rick.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. I'm so happy to have you on the show. Now, we were talking briefly just before about Groundhog Day because I was saying that movie was on the TV and my girlfriend was watching it. And I pointed out, I said, that guy right there, the flapjack guy, he's going to be on my show this weekend. And we were talking about how funny that movie is. And I was just talking to Jim about it last night, how it's great. It's a great movie because it doesn't explain why what happens, happens. There's really no logical scientific explanation.
I was thinking about our conversation, and it reminds me a little bit of Back to the Future, just in that sense. Is that one of the things I always liked about Back to the Future is any time travel movie, whenever they try to like show you the machine and say, and try to tell you that this machine makes sense, the script always breaks down because no time machine that you look at makes sense. So in Back to the Future, they just shortcut it and go, this is the flux capacitor. What's that? It's the thing that makes time travel possible. How does it work? Well, it's the flux capacitor. It's just this simple, silly
That's
loop.
As deep as it goes.
It's Austin Powers' machine, and he just looks at the camera and says, stop trying to analyze it and go along
from there. Yeah, absolutely. And much like that in Groundhog Day, yeah, they don't even bother. All you know is, well, it's Groundhog Day.
But you brought up, Rick, you said before the show, like, it's just the best explanation is God is fucking with you.
Yeah.
There's some sort of higher power.
Higher power is just testing you because it lets you off the hook as soon as you become a better person.
And that's the key.
It has nothing to do with technology. It has to do with human values.
Right.
Judgment call on what kind of person you are, and suddenly you're out of that ride.
Right, and I find that so funny because...
It's not Buddhist, it's practically Buddhist, because you have to transcend the wheel.
But yeah, or you're stuck on the wheel forever.
Yeah.
And in that case, it's like, it's almost arbitrary. Like, what does that mean exactly, to be a better person? You know, in his case, it just meant don't be so selfish. But, like, he even tried to, like, he went through that one whole day to do great things and try to save that old man, and he couldn't.
But actually, you know what? He had to learn humility, and he learned it from the old man dying. Because that's probably the biggest lesson he learned all day. Sure, he was nice to people, and that's good, because he had learned to be nice. But the other thing that all of us need to learn, of course, is humility.
I don't need to learn humility. I'm fucking humble already. I'm crazy humble.
True.
I'm like the most humble fucking person you will find.
That's true.
Name someone more humble than me.
Jesus.
Who? My gardener? But you, I'm sure you have some awesome stories about working on that movie, Groundhog Day.
Everyone is eating in the diner.
Yes.
And me and Duke, I'm going to sit in one table away.
Right.
And he's talking to Andy McDowell while stuffing, like, pancakes and a giant piece of angel food cake
in his mouth. I love that.
Take after take of a giant piece of angel food cake. Angel food cake is great because it sponge compresses into your mouth. This huge square just burrow into your cheeks.
Right.
Compresses and then cut into the pan.
Oh, okay.
And here's the new piece. But every take, you know, he was taking it, but you could start to see it sort of slurring down.
Nice.
Gag reflex. And he was getting through it. But
Duke and I
were in tears in the next table watching him just wolf it like it's all good. Cut. It's not all good.
No, it's terrible. I had to do that. I had to eat a bowl of cereal once in this movie and just over it. And at first, you're like, this is delicious. And then you're like, this is
Take
the worst.
Nine. It's vitamin to Benjamin, right?
Yeah, I can't eat anymore. It's so bad. And you bring up Rook Dukeman, and it struck me again how many funny people are in that movie, even in the smaller parts.
Bill Murray.
Yes, he is very good in that.
He's in that his movie, small right? part. Am I right? Am I remembering
but like
it right?
You and Dukeman and Robin Duke and Dave Pasquazi.
Pasquazi's in.
And I was pointing out to Brooke, because he's on that show Boss
Kenny Campbell.
Now. Yes, Kenny Campbell.
In the hotel.
And his part is tiny.
He's just great.
One or two lines, but he's so good. And, like, Pasquazi is on Boss right now because he's shooting Chicago. And I was explaining to Brooke how he's, like, probably the funniest person that nobody's heard of. Mm-hmm. You know?
He was great. We did year one together.
Oh, really? I never saw that, so I did not know he was in that.
Yeah, he plays the whispering advisor to the treacherous king, played by Xander Berkeley. I'm a brutal, whip-bearing guard who just beats the living shit out of Jack Black all the time, and I get mine at the end when the Tower of Babel falls on me.
And you play a lot of, like one scenes. Like, we had Fetterman on the show once a long time ago, and we talked about how he usually has one line or one scene. And you're kind
of working on that, man. I'm working on not doing so much of that. I'm trying.
But it's always very memorable. Like, for instance, the Rocketeer. I remember when.
Oh yeah, he just called me down because he's a buddy of mine. Joe Johnston's a pal.
Right.
And we were friends when he was doing effects on Willow.
Ah, okay.
He was on the effects team because he's the guy that designed like X-wing fighters and all that stuff and TIE fighters. That's a lot of that is. The cross between Ralph McQuarrie and Joe Johnston
together. Okay.
And he then went on to direct, and I was a buddy. He says, hey, you want to come down to the set and see the ballroom? I said, heck yeah. He said, you want to be in the movie? I went, oh, of course. And he goes, do you want to be in every trailer? And I said, how could I possibly know I'm going to be in every trailer? Well, because only two people say the name of the movie in the whole film.
Right.
And you'll be one of them.
It's the Rocketeer.
Yeah. So he got me to say the name of the movie. And
that's awesome.
I got the trailer.
Yeah, that makes sense because you're not going to say Rocketeer over and over again. But yeah, it's the Rocketeer. And what did he just direct? He just directed something really good.
Captain America.
That's right.
Great. And movie. I helped him. I gave him a scene in that.
Yeah?
Yeah, I helped. Wow. I worked. And we were brainstorming over lunch. And the scene where that six-wheeled car is driving down the runway to load him onto the landing leg of the plane as it's taken out, taken off outside of the mountain. He says, what do we do with that car when it's at the end of the runway? And I said, you should make it an all-wheel drive car and put it in full reverse and cycle through the gears in reverse.
Oh, that's cool. Yes.
And
that movie's awesome. I loved Captain America.
Me too.
I thought it's one of my favorite superhero films I've ever seen.
Yes.
It's my favorite superhero movie I've ever seen.
And it's nice.
Maybe
it's
my favorite
refreshing.
So well.
It's so refreshing.
He's such a good guy. And he's an actual, here's what an actual hero does. Here's what I think is disintegrated in the modern hero. Remember when a hero was a guy that would defend someone he's never even seen?
Right?
Yeah.
Remember that? He sees like a house on fire. He run in there and come out with people who aren't going to say thank you. He goes home. It's okay. Mm-hmm. A modern hero is a guy who killers are after. So he takes some dude, throws him out of his own car. Who knows where that guy was going? He went face down on the pavement. And now he's driving away in the stolen car that he injured one innocent guy already. And now he's driving the wrong way up a road to get away from the shooting guys. And all these cars are swerving out of the way and crashing. There's all like little children in the cars.
Right.
Bashing into the windshields. He's killing like 35, 40 fucking civilians just to save his own pussy hero, fake hero ass. And that's what they're calling the hero of a movie now.
That's it's like evil shit. Thing. Yeah, I was watching Dexter the other day.
That's true.
You know, and I love Dexter. But like a big part of why people like the show is because they think, yeah, Dexter's like the anti-hero and he protects people by killing people. But it occurred to me, if Dexter were to like alert the cops when he is on to somebody, he could save lives. Like when he realizes who is murdering people and decides I'm going to get that person, usually two or three people die before he gets to them. He could just go to the
cops. It takes him much longer to get to the guy because he has to do it behind the law rather than the law screeches right up and gets the guy.
Just because he has to do it his way because he's sick. But in the meantime, people get hurt and people die.
There's another great example.
He's not such a great guy. He's not such a hero.
I refer to the era of the Thunderbirds.
As in Thunderbirds are go?
Yeah. Thunderbirds, all this high-tech machinery with not one single real tangible weapon on board any ship. It was billions, maybe trillions of dollars invested in racing to save a guy who's hanging by one hand off a bridge somewhere. Like, all that money spent to rescue people.
Right.
And no money spent for weaponry.
Not
fighting. You never see ships that aren't bristling with barrels of guns everywhere.
Right.
And they're all dropping you know, dopey fucking space goon, armed space goons that, like, they're in space, but these are retards. They can't fly the fucking ship. They're not smart enough, you know.
And they're helping, they're rescuing people or helping save the planet, like natural disasters. They're stopping that kind of stuff.
No, they're not even doing that. They're just here to kill a thing on its own fucking planet, you know, where it's living anyway, and there we're showing up to fucking gun you down.
Right, right, yes.
And the all science fiction now is, you know, and the aliens are mad because we're on their planet and they're shooting back at us.
Which, I can understand that.
Yeah.
I can get that.
But, like, everything is an armed space guy now. Are you ready to kill the ugly thing that doesn't look like us?
Avatar is a perfect example of that, yeah.
Yeah, right. You know, and that's all science fiction now is armed guys dumping off on a new planet.
Right. Because, that's why Captain America, it's another thing I liked about Captain America, because it was a throwback. Because it was, you know, it was retro. Yeah. So there wasn't lasers and aliens and shit like that. It was all...
Well, they had lasers.
Yeah, well... But I mean,
the zapping gun, the weaving's blue right, Hugo zapping weaving explosion thing. Ray.
But that the bad guys only had the lasers. No good guys. The good guys. Well, I guess didn't he pick one up at the end? And
the good guys got. Yeah. You know, there's they picked it up and shot back. But you know, it's sort of based on the all the crap they really were developing.
Right. True.
It's based. You know that helicopter rocket cigar looking thing he gets away in. They were building one of those.
Wow.
It was called the Triebeflügel. And they were going to, if we did not mass carpet bomb their factories, they would have had them.
Yeah, that's true. Now, that brings me to something I wanted to bring up that I did not know about you. You are heavily, heavily into the steampunk thing.
Yeah.
And you build steampunk models. And
I used to, yeah.
And you kind of know a lot about that stuff. Tom Frank told me that you were the guy.
I invent some of it, yeah.
Yeah, and now, so what is it about, because Jim, we were just talking about it the other day, and Jim was like, I don't even know what that is. Tell folks
look
at home.
Look at a clip of YouTube of S-A-J-V.
S-A-G-V?
J-V.
S-A-J-V.
Secret Adventures of Jules Verne, S-A-J-V.
Oh, okay, yeah, I saw you're on that show, right?
I helped invent it. I helped create all the machines. All the machines are basically my initial design that they then refine and build.
Oh, that's awesome.
Now, tell the folks at home what the steampunk idea is.
Steampunk. And now punk, they just put on the end of it to make it like there are certain modern elements to it. Otherwise, it's like an alternate universe technology that stayed in the 1800s, neo-industrial, giant oily gears and wheels with puffing steam engines, chuffing black smoke into the sky, and gas lamps and horses and buggies. But weird advanced submarines and airships too, but all working on an odd combination of they figured out how to make steam create levitation
before advanced electronics.
Before it was all digital boards doing things. There were analog versions of these things.
And right.
So they assigned me the task of coming in to be a creative consultant. So I thought if Star Trek, The Next Generation was all fluorescently lit. Very sterile,
very cutting edge.
Extras touching Lucite, not knowing what the fuck they're touching, and just saying words that aren't in their vocabulary.
Right.
And lots of techno, big block paragraph of techno babble, and just a blank field sky with stars in it, and then a thing appears, a ship appears in it. I thought we would make a warm, particulate, life-filled air that goes golden orange in a sunset and a sky you just don't see much anymore, like in the Disney movie where it was a Harrison Ellenshaw glass painting that the object would be moving through, you know, an idealized night sky.
Yeah.
Nice.
Haze around the moon. And the machinery looked like, oh, you pull this lever, it turns that rod, and it makes this thing do this. It feels like a manageable, in-your-hands, tangible hands-on universe again with science fiction things going on around it.
And, and so you were very hands-on, very involved in that stuff. But you also, I mean, obviously, that's not something that you think about when you think about a comedian or an actor who's into that kind of...
Everybody's 10 things minimum.
What?
Everybody is 10 things minimum.
Really?
Yeah, you are. You just look. If you settle into one thing, you don't bother to look at the other ones. It's like, do you want a laptop?
Yeah.
Do you know everything your laptop does?
No, that's a good point. You're absolutely right. I don't need to. Yeah.
You do the things you do on it, and the other shit just sits there completely dormant.
It does what it does.
Yeah.
Ah, I like that. Everyone is 10 things minimum. It's very, I like, that's a
you're good, sold that's a good with way tons to of software it. You never use.
Right. Yeah, that's true, because, yeah, I think about that all the time when, like, whenever we bring up Judaism or whatever, I have to tell people, yes, Jim is Jewish. And not like you would ever guess that, but that's one of the things that makes him who he is. Yeah, that's a good point. I like that. So, are you still involved in that? Do you work on any steampunk-esque projects or any of that stuff?
I have a Nautilus design. I'm trying to get to the people making the new 20,000 Leagues movies that I think will redefine the Nautilus. Because the whole point is, if they're going to use, and if you're listening in, guys, I love that you're redoing the movie. I'm okay with that. Some people are purists. They're going, leave the Richard Fleischer one alone. It was in color, and that should be enough. Hmm. But if you're going to redo it, you can't use the old design, and here is why. I'm not going to show you the new design, but I'm going to explain why you can't use the old one, and you cannot argue with the logic. You are changed after you hear this, so shut this off right now if you don't want to be changed. And the logic goes like this, that the Nautilus is one of the characters of the story.
Absolutely.
And as a character, it must startle the eye. No standard cylinder of metal splashing out of the water will startle the eye anymore or make us feel like one of the whalers seeing this thing we don't recognize come out of the water. We're so familiar with a submarine that when Harper Goff's design came out in 1954, its startling beauty created a sense of awe. And those two eyes and Kirk Douglas's incredible acting job, watching it come at him and all that, those were all amazing things. But that moment's gone.
Right.
Because we now have it memorized from our childhood or from, you know, replays and movies. It's everywhere now. And once it's everywhere, you lost the surprise and you have to redo it. You can't just do like the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. That cop-out giant piece of shit was an insult. Yes. I wanted to throw a juju bee at it, man.
I was going
to
bring that up. It
drove me fucking crazy. No, you had such an opportunity and you... God, no!
Yeah, it was totally a shortcut.
I got to the drawing board immediately and started to redo one that has a different dynamic to it. To be startling to the eye and to change... You have to change the rules. And yeah, it's not exactly the book. But you have to do that because as a character... To do anything else, no one gives a shit that it's not exactly like the book.
No.
You don't have to be that pure to the book that you lose the intent of, he wrote the book to blow people away because no one ever heard of a submarine.
Right.
If you're going to honor Jules Verne's intent, you got to change a thing from the book to hit people in 2012.
Right.
You don't have that option anymore if everyone gets reset to 1870.
Right.
You lost that through time.
No, that's, you're absolutely right.
The audience will not give a shit. You have to look at the new design. My name is Rick Overton. You'll know where to find me.
That's awesome. Okay, good to know. Now let's bring up a topic, something that happened this week. I sent you guys the links. When Michelle Bachman was on Jimmy Fallon this week.
Crazy, lion-ass bitch.
Lion-ass bitch. That Questlove and the Roots played lion-ass bitch. Now, I found it very funny when it happened. And my kids love Jimmy Fallon, and they watch it. And so we're watching it, and I thought to myself, hey, that's lion-ass bitch by Fishbone.
That is lion-ass bitch indeed.
And they didn't know, and it was funny because I watched her, Michelle Bachman, going, hello, and not knowing. And I looked at my kids who didn't know. But as I was watching them, my daughter goes, that's... Why is nobody clapping for her? And I thought, well, she's not very popular with this crowd, I said. And because she didn't really know who she was, who Michelle Bachman was. My kids are not that politically savvy. But I said, you know what the name of the song is? And my daughter said, no. I said, it's Lion-Ass Bitch. And she laughed at that. And I thought, okay, she gets the humor in that. But, of course, afterwards, Michelle Bachman was very upset and, you know, demanded an apology and all. Now, my feeling is... That's everything that was supposed to happen in that, I think, happened. Because someone was going to find out, and she was going to get upset, and I think everybody knew that that was going to happen.
Right.
I think even, you know, Questlove, The Roots, everybody knew someone's going to be upset about this. But I don't necessarily think that she should have been so upset by it.
Well, here's what I think is, however upset she is, she does a disservice to herself by showcasing her humorlessness.
Yep,
right. In general, thank you. What you need to do, and this goes beyond party. This is what every politician, no matter what your party, you have to be able to show that you have a sense of humor about yourself, that you're not a completely self-absorbed narcissist. The reason they played that song is because she seems to be kind of a self-absorbed narcissist, and she seems to be a person who's not very familiar with being honest.
And she seems like a lying-ass bitch.
Yeah.
Yes.
She does have it. Yeah. Now, having said that, of course, Questlove, obviously, that's not polite to do to a guest. So I get that he did something that you probably shouldn't do to a guest, because you don't expect to get sandbagged on a show like that. But I just think you just shouldn't be so humorless.
She screwed up by calling all the people that didn't know the joke. Now know the joke.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She just made it 100 times. She spilled gasoline on the fire.
And you make it worse. I mean, if you're going to point out that somebody insulted you or dissed you, don't stomp your feet and go, oh, I don't like that. Fire back. You know, at the very least, go, oh, I'm a lying ass bitch. Well, what about you? What, you know, say something clever or funny back to show that you get it and that you can give as good as you got. That's, you know, it is a comedy show. Yeah. So
once you show that it hurt you, that's open invite every time you appear for someone to get another one of those beauties out of you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember
now it's going to be all, people are going to write new songs just so they can play around with them.
Right? I remember once Michael Strahan was on Jimmy Fallon, and he came out and the Roots played something, and they were talking about, because the Roots are from Philadelphia, of course, and they love everything Philadelphia, and they're talking about the Eagles, and Strahan said something like, yeah, the Eagles are a good team for a couple games. And they all went, boo. And then Questlove goes, yeah, just like your sitcom was good for the 2 times it was on.
Yeah.
And they were going back and forth, and I thought, that's perfect. I mean, obviously it wasn't as serious as that, but they were insulting each other and going back and forth. And that's what you need to do. Don't be so humorless about it. And,
no.
And that's what, like, did you guys see Herman Cain on Letterman?
No.
I just watched it today. And I'll say, I will give Kane credit because he was able to keep up. Because Letterman's brutal when those guys are on. And he said it flat out, no, this 999 thing is not going to work. He goes, no, that's the same trickle-down crap we've been hearing for years. He says right to his face. And I was like, that's absolutely right. And Kane said, well, this is my plan. And he kept up with it. And I'll give him credit for you know, being good-humored about the whole thing. And that's what I thought was what people don't get. If you don't get the joke, if you don't realize that you're part of the joke when you're on a comedy show, you've lost, man. You lost everything.
It's over.
Yeah.
You got to say, this is a comedy show. Well, I'm here to entertain people. I'm part of the joke.
Look at Bill Clinton. What was the right. One of the defining moments of his becoming president?
Absolutely.
Is a silly moment of playing saxophone on a talk show.
Arsenio.
Yeah. Yep. He does that, and up until then, he's just that hit governor, right?
Yes.
And that's the story that's told about him.
Close the fucking window.
Bachman fan.
Yeah,
and that's an actual barking-ass bitch.
And that was like the first... he didn't say anything. He didn't talk when he was on Arsenio. He just did that, and everyone went, whoa, look at this guy. He can make light of himself. He wasn't on there to talk about his policies.
And honestly, right there, a lot of women are going, I'm going to give that man a blowjob.
One of them decided.
Monica Lewinsky thing is another good example. So many jokes.
Yeah.
So many jokes, and guess what? Justifiably so.
Sure.
Did he ever come out and say something like, you know what they said about me the other day, said this crazy joke? No.
Right.
Because the fact of the matter is, you're a political figure and you screwed up. Bachman.
And he took it.
Bottom line is, whether she should know it, she shouldn't be this dull, but like, your views on farm subsidies showcase a liar. You're pretending to be fiscally conservative when your personal wealth shows otherwise. That's lying. So
being married to a gay dude?
Well, yes, that's somebody's lying there. So you have to take it. You have to take it. And if you take it and you're good humored about it, it goes away. But like you said, she just makes a, you know,
She's stupid not to prepare for people identifying the truth about her.
That's the part I don't understand. Coached.
She should have brought a comic in, right-wing comic in to coach her on how to roll with the punches. She's taking it poorly, but I would not want the job of coaching her.
Oh, God.
Country drive with a nightmare.
Yeah, you earn your money when you take that gig. For sure.
She probably does have a coach. She just probably doesn't listen.
Yeah. She thinks God's going to guide her hand.
I don't think she actually believes that, by the way.
I bet you're right about that.
Because here's the thing. When people talk about, this would be a tip of the hat to our friend Eric Bramlett, who listens to the show. People in the political arena often talk about their views on God and whatever, and they make religious people look fucking stupid. And yes, some religious people are fucking stupid. But let's be clear that most of the politicians, the vast majority of the politicians on both sides of the aisle, when they talk about God, are not actually talking about God. It's a talking point. Right. It is, this is how I should appear, and particularly in the conservative arena, when their real agenda is hoarding wealth, talking about God is a convenient way to get votes from people who don't have wealth.
Sure.
You got it.
Yeah.
So let's not make the mistake of thinking she represents Christians or any of that nonsense.
No,
Mitt Romney might actually be a real Mormon for all I know, but I don't even know that that's true.
Oh, Mitt. All right. Well, I just wanted to bring that up because it was in the news and it's funny to me that kind of thing happened.
I want to bring up something else about that Bachman said, and it annoys the shit out of me. She said, she goes, this is typical liberal media bias.
Right.
If Michelle Obama came on to Jimmy Fallon and they did something like that, people would be up in arms. Two things. One, Michelle Obama, people like her. They don't like you. Two, Michelle Obama not running for president. Michelle Obama is the first lady. Three, yeah, that's right. We like it better when people make fun of people we don't like. So if you go on a conservative show and make fun of Michelle Bachman, yes, they will string you up for it because you're on the show where they don't like you. That's life.
Well, and she brought up the point.
They have little baby rules in their heads. It's like, yes. If you really like hand that to a psychologist, you're like, that's not how a grown-up would.
Absolutely.
The things they're angry at, that's like what a little kid would be angry at.
Right.
I constantly.
Their brains aren't fully formed like an adult.
Right. My kids are constantly saying to me, that's not fair. This isn't fair. And when they were littler, I used to accept that. And now I say to them, I don't even know what that word means anymore. I say, look up the word fair in a dictionary. Fair is a word you use for board games. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the only time the word fair can be used is sporting events and board games.
Yeah.
There's nothing fair about the world. The word fair doesn't even exist in real life. So don't come to me and tell me that this or that is not fair because
The word fair is about as applicable as the word normal, as we've discussed.
Absolutely.
They don't actually refer to anything.
And yes, nothing is fair. When Michelle Obama appeared at NASCAR and she got booed by everybody, sucked it up. She said, I don't like being booed, but she knew that was going to happen because there was a lot of people there who don't like her.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what you described.
And did she say, if Michelle Bachman had showed up at NASCAR, they wouldn't have booed because they wouldn't have.
Right, but she knew that that's the way it goes. And also she said, oh, well, I did what I was there to do.
And also, hey, Michelle Obama's pretty.
Yeah, that's another
Bachman,
thing.
Bachman, you're a weird-looking witch-like crone.
Weirdo Weirdinson.
She is crazy. She has Manchurian eyes.
I
don't mean Chinese either. I mean, she has looked like they sat her in that, born identity chair and put her through all kinds of weird drugs and programming. And screeching noises in a room where the chair is spinning.
And by the way,
absolutely.
Anybody who's an actual Republican, because I know there are some, I'm sorry for you. You have the stupidest candidates this year. I don't know what happened to your party.
It's horrible.
I don't know. But, as we think back, it's starting to become more and more like everyone is fondly recalling Nixon as being, wow, at least that guy...
He was a hippie compared to these fucking guys, man. He was talking about and
healthcare
he was talking about. They don't even want to acknowledge that. This is a What the right is really good at is taking the center and pulling it up like a flagpole and then jamming it way over to the edge. Yeah. It's like the way I liken it to when a woman moves into your house and she says she'll take half the bathroom's to counter space.
Right.
And it's mostly just this giant sweeping dominionist territory takeover, and there's this tiny little strip at the edge for all your man things.
I don't know if you guys noticed in my bathroom, but it's the funniest thing that happened when we moved in here. In our shower, the corner thing is just filled with all of Brooke's shit, and I have like a little shelf on the side of the shower with like three or four bottles in it.
Man things.
And I said, when we moved in, I said,
that's the middle right there.
Yeah, I said, so this is my area here. And she laughed and I was like, okay, that's the way it goes. And not that I need a lot of room, but that's the way it is in every house. I mean, unless you have your own bathroom, but how many houses have you been in like that where men and women have the man and wife have their own bathroom and the wife's bathroom has like shit all over. There's this and that and creams and powders, whatever. The guy's bathroom, you walk in, it's a toothbrush, shampoo, that's it. There's nothing there.
You may, it may look like you're moving out.
Yeah. And it's not clean either. That's hilarious. My kid's bathroom's a fucking nightmare. All right, let's move on to trivia for this episode. Last episode, the trivia question was about Carrot Top, and I asked what his real name was. And Andy Wood said Scott. He couldn't get his last name. Do you know Carrot Top's real name, Rick?
Scott Thompson.
That's right. Scott Thompson is his real name, much like the kid in the hall, Scott Thompson.
Yep.
But Jason Wall was the first person to get that right.
Bitter trivia. Scott Thompson's real name? Carrot Top.
Jason Wall was the first person to get it right, and I offered him a prize, and he said, as a prize, he wants me to break the Carlos Mencia DVD I got with a stolen hammer. So I'll do that in your honor, Jason Wall.
Nice job, sir.
Well done for that.
That's funny.
Trivia question this week. I just had one. Oh, it is about Rick Overton, and hopefully Rick will be able to answer it. But the question is, on what TV show did Rick play a character who was named for a war criminal? What is the name of the show where Rick played a character named for a war criminal?
The show where Rick...
So I want the name of the show. Do you remember it, Rick?
War Criminal.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's a good one.
I'm going to guess the Benny Hill Show.
No, Rick was not on the Benny Hill Show, but that's a fine guess. Do you have a guess, Rick? Anything from your varied career?
Now, forget that time you were on the Benny Hill Show. That's wrong.
It's not that, because you played Hitler on the Benny Hill Show. That's not it.
Help me out here. Gee.
Well, if we can't guess it, we'll throw it to the listeners and they can write in and try to guess. I'll tell you after the show. All right, so.
Oh, wait a minute.
Write in. Well, I'll give you the whole show to try to guess it. But if you folks at home think you know what it is, write to paul@thekingoftv.com and you can win a prize, one of our many wonderful prizes. I want the name of the show, not the name of the war criminal he played, but he was named after. He didn't play the war criminal. Don't get me wrong. Don't confuse. He was just named. He had the same name. So, what was the show that he was on that he played?
It was a show that was like Seinfeld. And it was called. It was a Eastern European name.
Yes, you're so close. You're very close to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Folks listening right now are saying, oh, I know what he's talking about.
Yeah. I was Eastern European yes. Building manager, and it's like, you know.
There you go. You got it. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
And the character was Milosevic.
Milosevic.
Well, that's funny.
Yeah. All right. So Rick gets a prize. Right. All right. So maybe I'll come up with another trivia question before we move on.
Hey, I want to transition since we're speaking of dictators.
Yes.
So Paul's last name is Goebel, and this is how I want to set this story up, because I want to make it clear that Paul and I, while drunk, weren't actually being racist. So Paul's last name is Goebel, and ever since I've known him, there has at least been one person who thought they were being funny by calling him Goebel. And they will say, oh, Paul Goebel, like the Nazi, they'll say. And I think anybody who has a name, like you have a name, anybody who has a name, there's some.
One of those.
Yeah.
If I run with your mind, I'll find it.
If they, if there's a joke associated with your name, you hear it your whole life.
That's Ovaltine. Just,
Oh, God. Rick Ovaltine.
And when somebody does it, they think they're the first person to ever do it.
Oh, it got a huge revival after Young Frankenstein.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
When she comes in, she's trying to seduce him. Can I get to something to think? Some Orbitine.
Ah, Rick Ovaltine.
Frau Blücher. Remember?
Yeah.
That's right. We saw that live. We saw
the musical. It was great.
It was great.
I loved it.
So, in general, that's a rule. Like Jim Bruce, like Lenny Bruce, which is just not a bad thing to say, other than to say, no, sorry. So last night we were playing blackjack because we went to a Indian casino and got hammered.
Yeah.
And it was fun because we hadn't done that in a long time and played blackjack. And the name of our dealer was Noy.
Noy. That's right. Noy. N-O-I.
And I'd never seen that name. And so people were saying, come on, deal me some good cards. And I go, yeah, and stop ruining my pizza, Noy. Man, I hate how Noy ruins my pizza.
And I was like, hey, Noy's a good guy. Usually people try to avoid him, but I think we need to give him a shot here. He's a good guy.
I was very happy at myself. I'm like, I bet he hasn't heard that. At least that, he probably hasn't.
Well, I don't know, for not, 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
That's been on, right? The Noid. I said, hey, bring the Noy. That's what I said.
Oh, really? Yeah, bring the Noy and bring the pho.
You're being paranoid now.
Yeah, stop being so paranoid. Will destroy, as the king said.
Yeah. That rag's just about dry now.
I think so.
Run the heck out of that.
Thank you for helping us do that. Let's talk about another thing. I was noticing you when I played Rufus on the Bill and Ted's.
I did.
Adventure, the show, and the cartoon, right? Did you do the...
No.
Just the show?
Just the live-action show.
And Rufus, of course, was the part that George Carlin played.
George Carlin made famous.
So that was... must have been a big deal when you got that gig.
I was elated.
Taking over for Carlin.
To be able to... Well, not taking over. He never really was interested in
the series. Oh, really? He was not going to do it at all?
No. He had other stuff to do. So it was just open to me to do.
And you already knew Carlin at this point, right?
We'd only met in passing and only got to know each other a little better later.
Okay.
Into the mid and later 90s.
So
you
knowing him...
You learned how to do Sean Connery.
Okay.
And it is that impression that bonded us as I gave him lessons in that.
And why did he have to do that?
He wanted a lot of impressions.
He just wanted to, just
and
for that
one is my specialty.
It's one of the best. It is definitely one of the best. Now, getting to know George Carlin, I mean, I've heard like Paul Prevenza talk about him and people who knew him, and they talk about when you think about jokes, he was the guy. He was all about jokes. And
longer bits. It wasn't just separate jokes. He had long connective tissue bits that would have a description building up to a joke that, you know, wasn't instantly just the joke. But so it wasn't just like a... It wasn't
no,
a joke
not
guy
like
the
one
way,
line.
Like not Mickey like Mason is a
Maury
shorter
Amsterdam,
thing.
Right.
Maury Amsterdam guy with a joke. He had jokes spiced and spiked like a heartbeat into a piece that had a long, long
right.
life. Each had
and
the life. Each one had the life of a dog. You know.
But hanging out with him, would he often go into or at least just expound on stuff? And it sounded like.
No,
know,
always,
just
no.
Him talking about it?
Yeah. Sometimes when the meter was off, it's like, you know.
Just hanging out.
Meter's off.
That's good to know. Because, yeah, it's sad when you got a guy who just is all, he's on all the time and whatever. And you don't see that. You don't see that so much. Because, like, I watch The Green Room religiously. And, you know, it's, we talked about it on the show ad nauseum. I say any young comedian should be watching The Green Room. Because you learn so much about comedy in that 1 hour.
So much more than if you just saw them doing their act.
Yes. And like the one episode that Jonathan Winters was on.
I was on that one.
Yes. Was so amazing to see you guys. And like Jonathan Winters, I don't know that he says any like anything really outrageously funny in that episode. But the stories he tells and the way he talks about himself is so compelling.
And insightful.
Yes. And you
and
go.
Sharp. And he's on his game like.
Amazing.
The age means nothing.
Right. And the like he tells the story about when he came home from the war,
yeah,
and his mother had thrown away like stuff he collected, and she says, "Well, we didn't know you were going to survive." And I think, and I'm like, and he's making a point. My mother was a terrible person, is the point he's trying to make. He's like, I was raised by horrible people.
No wonder he has all these other friends.
Exactly.
And it's as plain as day.
And you go, I get it. That's why you did what you did. That's why you made up characters, and that's why you went a little nuts, you know, later on in your life. And
totally. And
it makes perfect sense.
It's not something you should be in an institution for.
Right.
That's something you should be holding seminars to tell others about.
It made him who he was and made him so great.
I'm grateful for it.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
It's, yeah, right? And I watched the episode where Belzer was on, and you and Belzer did your Jagger off.
he fucking spanked me, man.
It was so amazing.
He took me, and I thought you know, I thought I was gaining a little bit of ground, and he stood up. I went, okay, it's over. Once he stands up, it's over.
The funny part was,
he'll take me.
I don't know
if he has the exact same body as Jagger.
Yeah. Whoever said it, I said, if Belzer stands up and actually commits to this, he's going to kill it.
He killed it.
And he did, and I went,
and you
oh
saw
my
me
God.
At the end, I just go, I'm not worthy. Right. I bow.
It was a smart
bow
thing to
out.
Do.
I know when I'm beat.
And I thought, because he's an old guy. No, he could have just said, no, I don't want to do that.
Or, no, I wanted him to shred.
But it was awesome.
You know, they talked so me good. Into it because they called me out. I had to do it.
Yes.
But I knew I'd lose.
But to lose to
but the, to get the just for the laughs, just to be half of those, yes. You know, or one third of those laughs is all I wanted out of it.
And that's such it's such an amazing thing to the people you get on the show, and then, you know, and you talk about, you know, Kelly Carlin is there and Rain Pryor and people like that. And it's almost
Rain is killing it.
It's like the ghosts of their dads are there. You know what yeah. I mean? And that whole feeling, because I went to a taping in this last season, and it was Richard Lewis and Margaret Cho and people. And it was really such a cool thing to see the people there and people hanging out and listening. All the jokes and stuff.
Rain is out there killing it.
Really?
She is shredding on stage.
Oh, that's great. I've not seen her
shredding on
perform.
Stage. And Kelly's show about her dad, the Carlin Home Companion.
I've heard about that.
Is going to go on tour. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
And Prevenge has been there working it with her mm-hmm. and stuff. And it's that's come good. Together. It's such a heartfelt. You laugh and you cry and you learn stuff about George you can't even believe. That's but it all makes sense. I mean, when I say can't believe it, yeah, you can believe it. But the way the way she does it, she is really like a healer. She's amazing.
That's very cool. So I wish we had time for you to talk about all the guys that you met. That would be like a great show. But I wanted to talk about Carlin specifically. I find that so funny. He wanted to do impressions just for the hell of it.
Just because he wanted to learn impressions. Because his new girlfriend, Sally Wade, I guess... He and she, they were doing like impressions and stuff. She's a comedian.
Oh, okay.
And he wanted to get some comedy impressions going. And so we were talking impressions.
That's hilarious.
And we, you know, that one in particular and a little bit of Reptar.
Yes,
their son.
Oh, my God. Wow.
That's
brilliant.
Great. That is great.
Brilliant. All right. Well, let's talk about a little bit. Another topic I wanted to talk about was this article on the AV Club on the Onion about it. Someone wanted to say, thought there should be a Turner Classic Movies for television. This guy wrote this very long article that a lot of people touched on, saying that, you know, there is no place for that for TV. People watch classic TV anymore or classic episodes. And I thought he made
Nick
a good point.
Nick at Night used to do it.
Yeah, and Nick at Night and TV Land, too, used to be that.
TV Land used to be that. Remember when the History Channel used to not be all Hitler and Luther
right.
and Luftwaffe and secret submarine bases
actual
where
history.
He's still alive and shit?
Right, but at some point...
History Channel just is a major disappointment.
Fascist shit, man.
At some point, they realized...
Well, now it's paranoid shit. It's alien crap.
Yes.
It's
they,
even
they
worse.
Realized what it is that people are watching.
Kindler says it's the Hitlery channel.
Hitlery. Nice. What they do is they realize what people are watching and they decide, well, we got to start making money. And then they pour it in. Like, I guess the advantage that Turner Classic Movies has is it's the lowest budget possible because they have all those movies and they don't have to worry about people watching and getting great sponsors because it's such a low budget thing. And I guess, you know, Nickelodeon and TV Land, they said, we got to start making money and we can't keep showing reruns. Because they even used to show old commercials or fake commercials,
yeah, right.
You know, and that wasn't making them any money, showing commercials for the judge or Quix and stuff like that, you know. They weren't making any money on that.
Right.
But they had to, so they had to update, and now they have new sitcoms on. Have you guys watched any of those new sitcoms on TV Land or Nick at Night? They're horrible.
They have their own programming, you mean?
Yeah.
Their own budgeted things that they make on their lot?
Hot in Cleveland is the big hit they have there with Betty White.
Oh, Betty White. I love Betty White.
Yeah.
I just haven't seen the show.
I watched it. I don't enjoy it, but it's a big hit with older women. But yes, they that's an in-house thing. They produce it. It's only airs on TV Land.
Really?
That's it, and I remember, you know, I used to work with TV Land, and I used to have the thing that I did on there, and I thought it was great, and the big catalog, and looking at the old shows, and you know, you could turn it on at any moment and watch some old great show, and those days are gone. The old shows they show now are George Lopez and Everybody Loves Raymond, and you know, regardless of what you think of these shows, you like them or don't like them, they're 10, 15 years old. It's not classic TV. And I think
it's the same era that a non-dual processor Mac is now a classic Mac, and that's only 3 or 4 years old.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like the what they call a classic is even being accelerated and sped up now.
Yeah, the word classic is clearly overused.
Your car that you just bought, you drive it off the lot. Guess what?
As a classic.
As soon as it's off the lot.
But I think, I mean, this guy makes a good point, but I think the problem, that's never going to happen, is, I guess that's the point I'm trying to make, is this, you know, TV Land tried it, and History Channel tried it, and these guys tried it, but there's never going to be this Turner Classic Movies for television. That is never going to happen. I think, first of all, because a lot of these old shows don't exist anymore. The videotapes or whatever, they're gone. They've been destroyed, thrown in the garbage.
The museum doesn't have them?
Not, some of them are gone. I mean, when you go back way, way back, it's just, you know, people say, yeah, we threw them out. We didn't know there was going to be a place for them, and we threw them out.
My Mother, the Car?
I think My Mother, the Car, probably, because that was in the 50s. But I'm talking about...
No, it's not the 50s.
Wasn't it? Oh, maybe. Oh, because it was in color, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's like 65, 66.
So they got that. I'm talking about like early days of TV. Like, what was that?
Ernie Kovacs.
Even before that.
Because like, there's only little clips of Kovacs, really.
Yeah, if you can find whole episodes.
Monkey suit guys drumming on each other's heads. And the table.
Aerobic trio.
All the shit rolling down into the guy's lap.
That's classic stuff. And also to find it intact. That's the other thing is, maybe you find a clip or a whole episode, but there's no audio, or it's, you know, it's so degraded that you can't, it's not worth watching.
It wasn't transferred.
Yeah, right.
And the tape gave out.
Or it was stored incorrectly, and, you know, it's been eaten away.
On fire. Does that happen often?
Sure.
Stuff
goes up.
Yeah.
And the other problem is, whereas Turner Classic Movies, obviously they have a huge library of stuff that they own that they're showing. TV shows are owned by so many different people, you're going to kill yourself trying to get the rights to show all this stuff. You know, someone says, I'd love to see WKRP in Cincinnati in reruns. But good luck getting, getting all the music, getting the rights to all the music for those episodes.
Have you ever seen it in syndication, by the way? Because I have. And what'll happen is...
Yeah, it's terrible.
And it's jarring. Because everything's fine. Like, everything's there, except that when they put on a record that, you know, Johnny Fever puts on a record, and it's generic library music of like rock sounding song instead of
a real hit,
instead of like Eagles
instead
or someone
like
that, yeah,
or whoever he was supposedly playing at the time. The same thing with SCTV. There's a lot of like music issues that kept that from being released for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, yeah.
Freaks and Geeks, right? Don't they have that problem?
Or yeah. Didn't they? No, they did, yeah. And there's a big difference between a classic movie and a classic TV show. You know, you're talking about going back to the 20s when you're showing classic movies. Obviously, there was no TV back
then. Well, here's what I'll say that could make it work, and I'm not saying that anybody would ever do this, is Turner Classic Movies, one of the things that is very enjoyable about it, even though people mock it, of course, and that's fine, but you have having a host who tells you trivia about the movie making process is an interesting way to watch a movie like that.
Yes.
It's not the only way to watch a movie like that, but within that context, it's kind of nice. So if they did that with a classic television show, and like you featured a particular show and you talked about, oh, this is the episode where right after this, Brett Butler went insane. You probably wouldn't do that, but...
But it is a historical thing to say, you know, well, like, that's a perfect example. Because there was a kid on the show, this character Quentin, and he was a little kid. And things got so bad on the show, someone decided it's inappropriate to have these kids on the show. So they basically wrote out his character, and in the next season brought him back, and he was played by a much older kid, and they said he's all grown up now. And that's something that you can point out to say this was a historical thing. And, yeah, Brett Butler had some problems. You're going to find out she's nuts, but that's why this happened. And there's so much crap like that on TV that you can point out. Look at this different character. This, well, I mean, Seinfeld.
One day at a time. One day at a time. Talk about, like, contract things, and suddenly Julie's not in the show anymore. Because that was an ugly period of TV.
Even though her husband, even though Michael Lembeck is still on the show, but Julie is no longer there.
Yeah, and that's interesting to talk about, that just, like, the machinations behind the scenes. But
a little uncomfortable back at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Yeah, and then especially knowing what we know now about Mackenzie Phillips and all the stuff
that went on. But that's also why you'll never get to do it, because the producers or whoever owns the rights are like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to sign off on that.
and also, it would be great, like, you watch, you show old clips of shows, and you can have a whole, like, to use Rick as an example, you could have a whole Rick Overton day. Show episodes of Babes and Seinfeld and all these shows.
And, and the show that was just on last year, Chaos.
Chaos, yes.
It was such a good show. Yeah. Did you like the writing?
Yes, I did.
Charming, great, funny, witty,
amazing
quick.
Cast. I could not. When I saw
Tim Blake Nelson, Freddie Rodriguez.
When I saw the cast, I said, how is this show on during
Kurtwood Smith.
Yeah, why are they not pushing the show more? And your character was so funny.
Thanks, man.
Could have a whole day of shows where we're showing these guys who you recognize on shows. You may not know their names, and you know, like when I said to Brooke, I said the Drake, and she's like, oh, of course I remember the Drake. And you can show different stuff like that. And this Seinfeld's a perfect example, because like Bryan Cranston in his episodes of Seinfeld as the, you know, the dentist who is going to be Jewish.
Yeah, it would be nice if they would air old episodes of Seinfeld.
Yes.
You never get to see those on TV anymore.
If only we could.
Used to,
right? Constantly now.
But to see them in context and to have someone talk. I will say this. If this ever happens, if someone ever decides to make a show like this, you might be a redneck. No, I need to be involved. I will work for free. I don't care. If someone ever does a show or a channel or something like this, call me, because I want to be involved.
Because just to get it right.
Yes, because I would kill me to see it and have it, you know, go the wrong way.
Watch, you get a call tomorrow. We understand you're willing to work for free, 8 hours a day for several years.
But then they negotiate me down. They're like,
you're going
to
pay us.
Yeah, right? could you afford to pay us? Because I still...
If that's your starting offer, we'll just have to work you down.
Yeah, exactly. They still... They J-E-W me down, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I know what you mean.
All right, those are all the topics I had. I wanted to talk about that, just bring that up. And we might bring this, if this Turner Classic Movie for TV idea gains speed, we may talk about it again. I'd like to hear what Tom has to say.
Do you think that there are episodes anywhere of THE Cat?
I doubt it. That would, so many shows like that, that was why I loved...
I'm heartbroken to think that the early Robert Loggia jumping around with a dagger up his sleeve. Do you remember that, THE Cat?
I don't.
Yeah,
it was a half-hour drama. And it was done the same as the 66th season.
I think, wasn't it paired with Felony Squad? I got the season in front of me here. THE Cat was on... Oh, it was...
NBC.
It was on after The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It was The Man from U.N.C.L.E., THE Cat, and Laredo. But THE Cat was the only half hour in that thing.
Yeah.
But Felony Squad was also a half hour drama. And you don't see those, you'll never see those again. Half hour drama.
Half hour drama. You can't get enough commercials in there to pay for it.
Right.
For all the crews showing up all those days of the week.
And I think about Dragnet and Adam 12 and all those shows that, especially what Jack Webb did, he would just get in and tell the story and you got action and boom and you're out. 30 minutes in, out, you got it. You got a great story. But nobody can do that anymore. And now everyone, even comedies, they want to do an hour. They want to stretch it to an hour.
Dramedy.
Yeah, I love a good dramedy, but, you know, you got to have something to fill the time. that's why I love the Thursday night lineup on NBC, because you got, you know, all these half-hour comedies that are really funny.
Yeah.
And you can just sit and burn through them and laugh, and it's a great time. It's not, you don't have to, you know, because I watch a lot of TV.
Fringe is fantastic this year, by the way.
Yes, I'm enjoying Fringe.
This is maybe the best season.
What do you watch, Rick, on the television? I know you're a busy guy. Do you get to watch any TV these days?
Not a ton.
No?
I'm busy writing.
Yeah.
And I watch some movies, and I have cable, and I have on demand, and so I'll watch a movie every now and then, but I should be up on more things than I am. I watch Real Time, and I watch The Daily Show.
Boy, Real Time is
Colbert,
great, isn't it?
And I'll try to catch a Kimmel or a Conan and a Letterman when I can.
And that's a tough, because I do the same thing. I watch Colbert and The Daily Show, and I watch Fallon, and I watch Bill Maher.
Fallon, yeah.
And all that, you know, just watching those every week is a huge time commitment. But then, you know, I'm watching sitcoms and other stuff, too.
I jump back and forth a lot.
Yes.
Catch a little bit of each monologue. I don't always sit through all the guests.
I've started fast-forwarding past Snooki and people like that. I can't sit through it anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. She just never seemed interesting to me. Yeah, I don't blame her, and that's the thing I find. That's probably now that my current... I've never liked reality TV. Paul knows this. I've never enjoyed it. Never.
Reality TV. Since when is a bunch of women fighting over a man in a hot tub fucking reality?
Well, if it is, can I somehow get inside that reality? But...
Give me a call.
But here's the thing that's that I'm finding...
It's faker than fiction.
Yeah.
Right?
God, yeah. You can't make that stuff up, and why would you? But here's what I'm actually finding worse about reality TV than reality TV, and specifically the Kardashians. I'll just use this example because it irritates me. So Kim Kardashian recently gets divorced, and
what?
The hammer of society's judgment falls down upon her, and I find that more offensive than anything I've ever found offensive about the whole thing. I'm like, how dare you be upset with her? How dare you, first, you just slime balls of society in general, how dare you prop her fucking up? She's just a 20-something girl. All 20-something people, boys and girls included, are stupid because they're 20. Every 20-year-old is stupid. And why are they stupid? Because they're driven by their hormones. I remember being 20. I remember how horribly bad I wanted to have sex with something. I wanted to feel like I mattered. And I was stupid and angry. Or I was weepy and stupid, but stupid was the thread. How dare you prop up a person like Kim Kardashian, who's just a person, and then get outraged when she gets a divorce, as if that means anything, as if marriage means anything outside of your own head anyway. It's your marriage. You make it meaningful. You make it trivial. That's up to you.
Yeah.
But why should we be so outraged? Now I'm not going to watch the show. Now I'm going to boycott. Fuck you.
Yeah, you should. Yeah.
Fuck you and your bullshit boycott. You're going to boycott the Kardashians? How about you figure out shit that's actually going on in the world, you dipshits? Fucking makes me so mad.
He's up in arms about this.
I like that rant. That's my favorite new rant.
All right, here's the... I just came up with a trivia question for this episode. We're talking about shows that were on in the 66, 67 year of TV. These shows, Rat Patrol and Dragnet, and these shows we were just talking about. What was the highest rated show that season? That's the question.
The highest rated show of 66, 67?
Yes.
Ooh.
Do you have a guess, Jim?
Yeah, 60 Minutes.
No, I don't think it was on quite yet.
Oh, okay. Can I
ask a question?
Uh-huh.
Comedy?
I will give you that it was not a comedy. I will give you that. That's the only hint I'm giving, though. Did you have any other topics, Jim, before we wrap it up? We're about at the hour mark here.
I wish I did.
Was it Gunsmoke?
No, it was not Gunsmoke.
That's a great guess. Shit.
All right, I'll tell you when we're done. All right,
I know what it is, but I already guessed. I think I know what it is.
All right. Well, now, Rick, you're going to go. You just came from, the protest, the Occupy protest, and you're going back down there
when we're done. Yeah, it looks like they're not going to going to raid tonight.
That's awesome.
They're going to leaflet tonight.
Because they've been talking about kicking everyone out, right?
But now they say tonight, instead of a raid, they're going to walk through and say the raid may still occur, but we're going to give you a chance to get out, and here's some info on how where you can go, and we're going to try and be helpful.
That's pretty awesome. And we were talking about that before, and how here in L.A., you know, obviously cops get a bad rap and have for years, but
they're making up for lots of the behavior of other so far. I mean, this could all flip and everything we're talking about is thrown out the window if they start just pepper spraying unarmed people and beating them on the head.
But they seem to be paying attention to what's going on in other cities.
And they just don't need the added shit. You know, the other cities, maybe they didn't understand that they didn't need it. But now they know they don't know.
Well, it's funny to me because, I mean, you think about the riots we have had here in L.A. And we've had riots in recent enough history that you cannot ignore it. And I think somebody very wisely said, look, we don't need another reason to have a riot. Right. Let's not give the so far people in New York and other places have not rioted. But they've been lucky. We know what it's like to have a riot here in L.A. And
not every city gets one of those.
Exactly. Yeah. And we've had our share in L.A. for, you know, the fact that that we can all remember in our recent history when there was a riot here in L.A., that blows me away. You know, and it makes me think that there will be one that my kids can remember. You know, that they'll watch something on TV and go, holy shit, I can't believe this is happening. Like it happened, the Rodney King riots. So I think somebody in charge said, let's make sure that does not happen. Let's not give them a reason.
My mayorship and governorship to have that on my record.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I do actually, speaking of. So angering.
Speaking of riots.
By the way, sometimes a riot's necessary. It just is. Sometimes it's necessary for people to stand up.
Like quiet riot.
Sometimes or a zoot suit. Okay, there's a lot of stuff going on. A lot of stuff goes on and whatever. Black Friday comes around, and there are shootings at Black Friday, and everybody asks why. Well, how about because you, media, culture, decided to call it Black Friday, and you decided to up the ante on consumerism because you're so desperate to...
It's the devil's buffet.
Yeah.
He laughs and drinks and high fives the flames themselves when he sees people pepper spraying children in the face to grab a video game for their own kids.
Yeah.
And rioting over $2 waffle irons.
And by the way,
slamming grandfathers to the ground while he's trying to save his own child and breaking his face because he stuck for a second. He stuck the video game in his pants. Did you see that one? A video game in his pants halfway in so he could grab his grandchild out of people trampling other people.
Uh-huh.
The security cops grabbed him and faced him.
Because they assumed he was trying to steal
it. They thought he was trying to steal it. Jeez. And it broke his face. He's out cold with a giant pool of blood on the ground. And now the police are trying to protect themselves from a lawsuit by saying that they're within their rights to do that under any circumstance, as opposed to, excuse me, sir, will you just simply come with us?
Right, right.
That they violently throw him down like that for any reason. For any reason they violently throw him down, it's about to be his branch of the Walmart. He's going to own that fucking Walmart. Yeah. Unless the law has just gone so sinister that there's zero justice.
Well, and that's one of the issues, of course, is ever since the expansion of the ability of the law to do that, starting with George Bush and sadly continuing on with our current president, is just that the expansion of what you can justify in the name of fighting terror extended to things that have nothing to do with the fight on terror. That just really have to do with slowly creating a police.
What's amazing to me is
police state.
We went out to see a movie on Black Friday just to get out and go do something. And then
I stayed the hell home.
Yeah, and we just happened to be by the mall and we found ourselves in the mall and I realized, oh no, we're in the mall on Black Friday. And I thought, let's get the fuck out of here. Because we were just kind of looking around, and we bought a couple things and then left. But it occurred to me that as I was looking around at these people, just shopping madly, I thought, don't you people have the internet? You can get all this shit just as cheap on the internet. Why do you have to go to the store and kill yourself?
Don't you have actual friends that you love and that you can do other things? Can't you do that? You don't even have to go online. Yeah.
And how about, you know,
it's like telling a fly to look up shit online.
I want to smell it now. I want to smell shit now.
Yeah, it's true. I want to see it. I want to touch it.
Must be with millions of other flies smelling shit.
I mean,
that was one of my favorite tweets, by the way. I know this is a terrible tweet, but the tweet I wish I was a fly on the wall, specifically if it was a wall of shit.
Who was that?
Me.
Oh, you idiot. Yeah. All right. Anything else? Do you want to tell people what you got coming up, Rick, or anything online people can check out that you want
to? I'm going to be at the Throckmorton Theater this Tuesday in Mill Valley, California, in Marin.
Nice. So go see Rick if you're in the area. Go see him on Tuesday. And you have a website, right?
I do. RickOverton.net and Facebook. I got a fan page.
So nice. join Rick's fan page. There you go. Like his fan page on Facebook, and you get updated with all his newest stuff.
I ran out of room for normal
stuff
on my other page. Now they say you can only do a fan page from here on in.
Slowly approaching that as well. Yeah.
Yes, it's about to.
But you can also be a fan of the Paul Goble Show on Facebook as well, and you can like our fan page. Jim, do you want people to be your friend on Facebook?
Yeah, sure, but I'd rather you follow me on Twitter.
Which is what?
Comic Jim Bruce.
And Rick, you're on Twitter?
Yes.
And what is your Twitter
handle? Rick Overton.
Rick Overton. So follow Rick.
And by the way, you can personally message people on. That's not the reason. So you can personally message me if you want.
Yeah.
But it's just that I never thought I'd like Twitter. I like that it's consolidated down to me trying to say something funny within a few characters and putting it out there.
Turns you into a joke editor, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
Yes,
it forces
it's a good
you
thing.
To find where the meat of the thing is.
Yeah, yeah,
and not
you're
get too wordy.
You're absolutely right. We've talked about this before, but I'm on the freelance SNL, so I send them jokes every week. And
do they use them?
No, not yet.
Not yet, but he's...
Not yet, no, but they. I get positive feedback and whatever. The point is, I send them jokes, and then sometimes what I'll do is, when they don't use a joke, I'll go, well, this joke is too great. I'm going to put this on my Twitter feed, and I'll just cut and paste, and it's always like, 90 characters too many.
Right.
And then what I end up doing is I go, okay, well, how could this be 90 characters less? Right. And I'm always able to do it.
And then you send
it
in.
And that's educational. Like, yeah, you could just cut. It's really good.
What I like to
do. Joke surgeon.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I like to do is because I will reference a lot of people and things in my tweets. But I always, if I name somebody in a joke, I try to find out if they're on Twitter. And then I friend them first. So then I can actually name them in the joke and they get it.
Sometimes I will write out a joke and it's not working. Then I have to do the Twitter version. And then I read the Twitter version. I go, wait a minute, man, I should try that. And that joke works better.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, because you got rid of extra verbiage.
I said the one that worked when it cut down, the cut down version was Republicans are like an alien invasion and Democrats are like UFO skeptics during an alien invasion.
That's great.
I like that.
Oh, I wanted to say, I don't know if you guys care about football at all. I don't either, but Vikings, I'll tell you, first a little bit of trivia. So this is how sad the Vikings are. A guy did a 102-yard return. 102-yard return.
That's more than the whole football field.
Oh, was it? No, I don't think it is.
Well, 100 yards is a football field, right?
Was it? Maybe it wasn't 100.
He could do 102 yards if he catches it in the end zone and runs
that must have been what it was.
Away, yeah.
And guess what? It didn't result in any points because he did the return. His team is so shitty, they botched the next play, then they turned it over. How great is that? That's so funny to me.
Welcome.
Neutralizing.
Yeah,
welcome to
absolutely.
Football. That's awesome.
How mad is he, too? He's like, that's the trivia question I'm going to be part of?
Yeah, that's going to make for that drunken, awkward Thanksgiving thing.
That's
years
right.
From now. And that was his heyday moment.
Aren't you that guy? That's what they'll say. Are you that? You're that guy who did that thing.
Yeah.
You're that guy who wasn't terrible, but still.
Still, the team was. All right, so follow Rick on Twitter. Follow Jim on Twitter. Follow Paul Goble Show on Twitter. And you can hear all the latest stuff. Thank you, Rick, for being here.
Thanks,
I appreciate you coming down. And, good luck at the Occupy rally. And thanks for being involved in that.
Thank you.
And, Jim, thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
And everybody at home, go
Would
fuck
you
yourself.
Like a mashup?
Oh, wait, yes. Oh, geez.
Did you tell Rick about the mashup?
I didn't. Oh, I What's totally forgot about this. How does it that I keep forgetting every week? Here's what Jim does.
I don't blame you.
At the end of every episode, Jim does a mashup impression where he takes two bad impressions and mashes them together.
Yeah, and one
and we
of
have
the
to guess what
one
they
of the
are.
Keys is I'm not good at impressions.
Yes. So we have to, and usually it's a pun of some sort. Like
John Mayer McCheese.
Or Christopher Columbo. Or Christopher Columbine was
that
one
was
of our favorites. Or Simon Cowell.
Mashed him up.
Yeah, you get it?
Simon Cowell was one of my favorite.
So he does it. We try to guess what they are. It's a pun. And
okay.
You got one?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Strong with the forces, this one. Mm-hmm. And troubles we have had in the past with his bloodline. Don't know if we should trade him. We should. What can you bring to the good side of the Force? Master Yoda, I promise, if you train me in the ways of the Force as a Jedi, I'll be dynamite!
Oh, my God.
That's okay. Pretty good.
Luke Jimmy Walker.
Yes.
It's J.J. Walker.
It's Jimmy J.J. Skywalker.
Okay. All right. Ah, very good. There's a lot of ways. I would have said Luke J.J. Skywalker. That's what I would have gone with.
Okay.
There's a lot of different ways you could go with
Luke,
that.
Luke, I did him as a different Skywalker. Here's Luke J.J. Skywalker. But I wanted to go into Tashi for dynamite. That would be that, right?
Jimmy J.J. Skywalker. All right. That was good. You got
that
it,
That was
Rick.
Written well by done. Tom Griffin, who's out of town.
Ah, well, that's that was Tom's
It's nice to call that written, right? Like there was writing.
He wrote it. All right. Sorry, I ended the show early. Maybe I'll edit that out. I could always do that. All right.
I'll leave it in.
That is the show. Thanks, everybody. Go fuck yourself.
Just prove lying piece of sack of shit, slut trash can, scummiest dirtbag, bitch!